So we are beginning of Vayikra. We'll talk about some over the first two psukim. So in pasuk number one, there is a Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Bava Kamma, as well as in the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah, parak Luv HaGazel, it's a pretty prominent parak. So the Gemara there tells us, how do we know that a korban has to belong to you? Yomarta lehem adam ki akriv michem, that a adam that brings from them, or from they bring from them an offering. So the Gemara seems to learn out from the word michem, even though it's not explicit in the Gemara in Sukkah, we learn that the korban has to be theirs. Additionally, it also says in the next pasuk, imala korbano min habakar, that has to be his korban. So those are the two sources that I know about in Maseches, in Talmud Bavli, about how do we know that a person has to own their korban, it can't be a stolen korban. The Gemara in Sukkah gets into, well, if it's stolen, who exactly owns it at that time? So even if he owns it, it can't be a stolen, etc. So all of that is learned out from those two languages. Okay, we're good so far? So that should seem to establish what from the Torah Sheval Peh, how do we know this halacha, that he has to own it and it can't be stolen. However, if you look at Rashi in Pasuk Beis tells us the following, Adam ki akriv lichem. So Adam, lama nemar, why does it have to say Adam? Could just say ki akriv michem. So why does it begin with Adam? Ma Adam harishon lo hikriv min hagezel. Shakol Ayashalo, just as Adam HaRishon, when he brought korbanos, he could not bring a korban from anything stolen because everything was his. Shakol Ayashalo, Af Lo Takrivu Min HaGezel. So, so too you should not bring a korban from something that is stolen. And the source on that is Vayikra Rabbah, meaning from the Medrash. The Medrash tells us that halacha. So, there's a bit of a question here on Rashi, right? Rashi, if you're trying to teach us the halacha that a person has to own their korban, and it can't be a korban that is brought from someone else, and it can't be a korban that is stolen, so why don't you look towards the sources that are in Talmud Bavli? Why you quote an entirely different source in order to teach this halacha? Right, that's the question. We're good so far? Any, we're good?
Yes.
Okay. So Rav Dessler, Michtav Meliyahu, raises this issue. And he raises it in the context of discussing the idea of Lo Sachmod. What is Lo Sachmod? Prohibition of Lo Sachmod. Lo Sachmod, Beis Reyecha, Lo Sachmod, Eishes Reyecha. It's the last of the Ten Commandments.
Covet.
Yes, coveting, or being jealous, is a prohibition of jealousy. And we discussed in the context of Parshas Yisro, how do we define the prohibition of coveting and jealousy, etc. But it means something. You're not allowed to, you don't have something, someone else has it, you're not supposed to covet that which they have. So in the course of his discussion on that, he raises this issue. Why is it that his korban ovelo? Why does Rashi quote that source and not the other source? And he explains, Davar gadol galulanu bazeh, that the Torah is revealing to us something big. What is that? Ki inyan ha-korban hu lahakriv asatzmo. As we learned from the Ramban said, what do we learn out from the idea of korbanos? That one of the things that he gives on his list is that just that we're offering this korban, but really you deserve to be killed. Right? You did a prohibition, you deserve to be killed, and Hashem in His great mercy is permitting you to bring an animal instead of yourself. So, ki inyan ha-korban hu lahakriv asatzmo, really you're supposed to be bringing forth yourself. As kolatz miyuso, all of yourself to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. V'zeh shayich rak b'nosin, and that is only workable if the person is a giver. But if a person is a taker, so the korban doesn't work. Ki anotel eino nosin b'shum ofen, because a person that takes is not able to give, and then it's not going to be a korban. So what is the Michtav Meliyahu trying to claim? I think what he's saying is that, no, it's a different halacha. Actually, let's continue on a little bit more. V'lefize, this is, by the way, volume 1, page 126. V'lefize, kol zman she'ifas hanatila b'lev adam, that as long, so long as there is a desire to get, a desire to take, that is in the heart of a person, which is what he called gezela shebelev, stealing in the heart, ein shayich bo korban. A korban is not doesn't work. Varak, and he explains that there is a pasuk in Yeshaya Samach Aleph Ches, sone gezel ba'ola, that Hashem hates olas that are stolen. Yishaya Samach, I may know where that Haftarah is from. That's a famous Haftarah where Hashem says, I don't want stolen korbanos. I believe it's the Haftarah of Shabbos Chazon. I just want to check them to make sure. You were?
Yes. Can you dress in Shabbos clothes for Shabbos Chazon?
Can you dress in... Yes. Right. So... This is not actually from the Haftarah of Shabbos Chazon, but there, the same theme appears in the Haftarah of Shabbos Chazon, which is that Hashem doesn't. What do I want your korbanos for if they're stolen, if they're inappropriate, etc. Right? You learned the Mishnah Berurah about dressing in. It's Machlokas Ramah and Mishnah Berurah. Right? It's probably subjective, not objective. Do you talk about that? It's because probably in the Ramah, which one says it? The Ramah is the one who says you shouldn't wear Shabbos clothes, I believe.
Well, I think we ended up you should take them off right after Havdalah.
Well, yeah, but the it's probably based on whether it's considered nikkur, whether it's considered recognizable, you're not bring Shabbos clothes. So probably in Krakow in the 1600s, people were so poor that they didn't have separate Shabbos clothing, or not everyone had separate Shabbos clothing. So a person shows up wearing their Shabbos clothing, so it will be recognizable. If a person is not wearing their Shabbos clothing, it won't be recognizable because not everyone has Shabbos clothing in the first place, as opposed to 19th century Rodin, where people did have a separate Shabbos clothes. So if you wouldn't wear your Shabbos clothes, then it would be recognizable. Okay. Anyways, so this is this is what's going on here. So what do we learn out from the idea of Adam, that a person is not able to have what we call Gezel Shebelev, that has to be fully yours, not yours that you took it correctly, but that is yours that you are fully giving it. And that perhaps explains why Rashi is really teaching a different halacha than what the Gemara was teaching. The Gemara was teaching a technical halacha. How do you know that the Korban has to be yours and that it could never have been stolen? By the way, those are not necessarily go hand in hand, right? It could be yours, and it could also be stolen, right?
Yeah.
How?
If he's given up hope.
Given up hope, right? He was miyayish once he gave up hope. So then it's yours. You made a kinyan. But you're still allowed to bring it. So those halachas are teaching that then. The technical halacha about whether you own it and stolen, etc. What is the learning out from the idea of Adam? So Adam is that, not that you are... That is, you totally own it, but that you are totally giving it. That you are totally giving it up to a Kaddish Baruch. Okay? Now, what is the meaning of that? What does it mean, I'm totally giving it up? So I think what the Michtav Eliyahu is saying is that a person who is... that person doesn't have desires. I mean, he doesn't have desires to own things. He has what he has, and he's very happy with what he has, and he realizes this is going to be giving up as a korban. So then, it's fine. I don't need it anymore. Just like if that thing belongs to him, so I don't have any desire for it. I don't have any wanting for it. It's that. So then the Michtav Eliyahu asks, okay, well, how do you get to that point? How do you get to the point that you are able to say, that person has what they have, and I have what I have, and that is totally fine? So it says the Michtav Eliyahu, how do you get to the status of Adam HaRishon where you have no desire for things that aren't yours? Adam HaRishon had no, and especially it's harder than Adam HaRishon, but the HaRishon had no desire for things that weren't his, because there was nothing that wasn't his. Whatever he wanted, he could go ahead and take. Here we don't have the ability to just go ahead and take. So he explains that Yitachin Rakim Yasim es kol she'ifos l'ruchnius. If your desires are not gashmius, but rather the ruchnius. If your desires are for spiritual items, so then it's doable. Why? Ki beruchnius yesh l'chol adam olam b'fnei atzmo v'ein shayich klal liga b'yolam chavero. That when it comes to spiritual matters, everybody has the ability to gain whatever they want to gain, and they are not going to be diminished by taking something that belongs to something else. What the Michtav Eliyahu is saying is that when it comes to physical, the nature of physical things, the nature of owning things, is that it is ultimately a zero-sum game. Now, we're not supposed to think about it that way, and there's plenty of wealth for everyone, but ultimately there is a set amount of stuff that a person can get in this world. And if somebody else, like certainly if you own a sports team, so of course sports represents the entire world, so there are only so many players that are out there that are good enough to play. Right? And if you don't get it, someone else is going to get it, and therefore you desire that player, which is on another team. Right? But when it comes to spiritual matters, it's not that what you're going to get is going to diminish from somebody else. What you're going to get actually helps other people. Everybody is able to grow together and increase together and become better together. And if one's goal is on spiritual growth, so then the material issues that people have between each other is no longer going to matter. So I heard on a... Good so far. Atkan. Actually, he goes on and says, that's what's going on in the famous Medrash. Yeah, he goes to the famous Medrash with the moon and the sun, where the moon goes and complains to Hashem, how could it be that the moon and the sun are both equal? It can't be that we're both equal. It's not going to be able to work out that we're both equal. So Hashem said that we're fine. So he lowered down the moon. So the moon, you're going to be smaller. All right, so what's going on in that Medrash? So be your inyan sh'olam ha'tachton olam ha'mispar v'ribuy, that the lower world is one of increasing and making smaller, meaning it's going to, everything balances out each other. Hayish nivra b'beis v'chasher yesh shnayim kfar yesh pirud, that once there are two, there's already separation. V'yiv sh'ashol yichanis echad b'tchumo shel chaver, it's not possible that one's not going to enter in the boundary of another one. V'atakad olamayi t'sa'atzu b'olam hazeh v'yaz yisk. So how does one solve this problem? Just remove yourself from Olam Hazeh. If that's not what, I'm not going to be bothered by such things, and my focus is going to be on Olam Hava or on Ruchnius, so therefore I'm not going to have to worry about these things. So Rudinsky, I've looked in his sefer. Although I found something else in his sefer that's going to be usable, but I remember hearing from him on one of his shirim that he gave. He says perhaps that's the idea of why Lo Sachmo, the prohibition of not coveting, only appears when you get to the end of the Aseret Dibros. It didn't appear before, and the presumption is that it's not included in one of the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. Why would I assume it's? Why would I think it might be one of the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach? So the answer is that it's unclear with the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach how limiting they are. Are even things that are outgrowths of those mitzvos, are even those included in the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach? So, for example, not allowed to kill. What about the prohibition of causing a wound to another person? So that's sort of an outgrowth of killing, right? That's the drawing blood on Shabbos is filed under the melacha of Shechita. So perhaps that would be included as well, drawing blood from somebody else. Or Gilui Arayos. So Gilui Arayos, prohibited relationships, there's also things that are connected to that. There are outgrowths of that. So are those included in the prohibitions as well when it comes to the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach? So Lo Sach mode is an outgrowth of what? Of Lo Sigzol. It's very intertwined with the prohibition of Lo Sigzol. So perhaps I would think that's prohibited, so we assume that it's not. Lo Sach mode only becomes a problem once you've reached the Aseret HaDibros. So why? Why did we have to wait for Aseret HaDibros in order for the prohibition of Lo Sach mode to be commanded? So suggests Rav Radinsky, because the nature of a person is that they desire more. The nature of a person is that they're always looking to get more stuff. So until the Torah is given, so what are people going to be desiring more of? So the only thing that they have to desire more of is physical things. That's all there's out there. But once we are given the Torah, once we are given the ability to grow and to gain and to get better spiritually, so guess what? So then we have the Torah to focus our Lo Sach mode on. We have our Chemda on. We have the Torah to focus our desire, our coveting on. I covet more Torah, and I don't have to worry about the physical world anymore, which is what Rav Dessler was saying as well. So while I was looking through Parshas Yisro, Rav Radinsky's Sefer here, in order to find that Vertorah, which I didn't find, but I did recall a different Vertorah, which we did talk about, I think, a couple of months ago in Parshas Yisro, and that is the idea of why was it necessary for there to be Achdus before Har Sinai, right? We talk Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, Ishachad Belevachad, they all were settled at the bottom of the mountain, everybody was combined as one heart. Why was that a necessity? Why is it considered a prerequisite for there to be Achlus in order for one to get the Torah? Right? Why of all things is that considered the one thing that needs to be worked on? So he points out that this idea that there be that that there be separate, well, not really separate, but equal, but that there be separate Jews or separate Shvatim with different ideas and different ideals, and that they are going to go ahead and do different things. So that is found elsewhere in the Torah as well. That we find that earlier as well. So there is the famous Medrash by Yaakov. We talked about this a couple weeks ago in a halachic context. When Yaakov puts out the 12 stones, and it turns into one. So what's going on there? So Yaakov, the Medrash tells us that Yaakov actually turned to Hashem and said, "Vaykach mi avnei hamakom v'yasam roshos av Rav Yehuda Omer," is the Medrash in Bereishis. "Shneimasar avanim natal kat natal," I'm taking 12 stones. "Kach gazar kadosh baruch hu shumamid shneimasar shvatim," just as Hashem said that there's going to be 12 shvatim. "Amar Avram Avinu lo hei midu Yitzhak lo amidam." Amar, Yaakov said, "Avram Avinu lo amidam, Yitzhak lo amidam," that Avram didn't have 12 shvatim that came from him, and Yitzhak didn't have 12 shvatim that came from him. "Ani imis achos heim shneimasar avanim zulazu." Yaakov says, if these 12 shvat, if these 12 stones join into one stone, so I'll know that I'm the one who's supposed to be the father of 12 shvatim. Right? Which is a very important thing, because if we think about it, that perhaps was Yitzchak's issue with Esav. I mean, why does Yitzchak always protect Esav? Why does Yitzchak think that he should be giving a bracha to Esav? So perhaps Yitzchak's thought is that at what point am I going to have to be all-inclusive? At what point are all of my children, at what point in the history of the Jewish people are going to change from an inheritance from a father to the eldest son, from Avram to Yitzchak? And at what point is it going to change to be a people, to be a nation, where it's going to spread out, where all of the children are going to be included? The Avram only passed it on to one son, to Yitzchak. So Yitzchak has to think, am I passing it on to one son, or am I passing it on to all my children, which is two in that case. So Yitzhak thought, I have to include all of my children. If I'm going to include all of my children, then somehow Yaakov and Esav are going to have to work together. Ultimately, what ended up happening is that Yaakov beat out Esav for the bracha, and therefore Yaakov is going to be the main son, and Yaakov gets the Masorah and Esav does not. Esav gets the booby prize, right? He needs to get something else. So Yaakov now turns to Hashem and says, okay, what's going to be with me? Am I going to be the next link that I pass it on to one person? Or am I going to be the one that's going to pass it on to 12 shvatim? And he turns to Hashem and says, here's 12 rocks. If they join together, then I'll know that I'm going to be the father of 12 shvatim. So it says Rav Zinsky, wait a second, it's the opposite. If I wanted to find that out, what would I have done? I would have taken one rock and said, if this breaks up into 12, so then I know that I'm going to be the father of 12 Shvatim. Why does he do what seems to be the opposite? He goes on and points out a few other midrashim where it says that that Adam HaRishon knew that there was going to be 12 tribes, and the fact that it says Ze Sefer Toldus Adam, so Ze refers to Yud Beis Shvatim, and there's another one as well. Ze is 12. Yeah. There's one more as well where it says Ze, which also represents the idea of 12. So the idea that there was going to be 12 shvatim is something that was already established from back in the day. So what does that have to do? Why did there have to be 12 shvatim? What does it then have to do with the with Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Har? They broke up into 12, and now they all come together. So the suggestion is that in order for the Torah to be complete, in order for the Torah to be done in the appropriate way, no single person is able to do it on their own. There are mitzvahs that are commanded for men, there are mitzvahs commanded for women, there are mitzvahs commanded for Yisrael, there are mitzvahs commanded for Kohan, there are mitzvahs commanded for Levim, there are mitzvahs commanded for Melech, there are mitzvahs commanded for a Nazir, there are mitzvahs commanded for all different types of people, that, and a lot of them can't combine with one another in order to be within one person. So in order for the Torah to be given, in order for the Torah to be distributed to the Jewish people, there has to be a recognition that we're all people together, and that we're all combined. And that perhaps is the pshat in the Medrash, that Yaakov wasn't asking if I'm going to have 12 separate children. He was really asking, are my 12 children going to join together to become one nation? All right, they're going to be one, and that they're all going to be accountable for one another, they're all going to be to work with one another, which is the prerequisite for the giving of the Torah. And then perhaps that's what then...
No 12... That'd be 12 rocks.
So why specifically? Well, he knew about the Z.
Why the number 12?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm sure you can. come up with something. But I mean, the Nezeh is what was... there was some kind of tradition that there was going to be 12. Why specifically 12?
Okay, so the Nezeh usually has 12 cycles in them.
Okay, whatever.
Something, because we do month, and a month is 12.
I don't know. I'm sure we could look around in Bereshis and find some ideas as to why the number 12 is chosen.
This came to fruition when the boy said Shemant to Yaakov on his
death.
And he responded to Babylon.
They
said the Shema.
Okay.
And he responded.
Okay. That's true.
And he realized that, yes,
that they really were all connected and they're all going to be passed on. Right. Okay. Very good. Very good. So then that perhaps also is important when you get into the area of Karbanos, when you get into the beginning here, that Adam, I am giving it entirely over. It's not about me, it's about it being given over. And perhaps symbolic of that is who's the one who brings the Korban? So not the person, but the Kohen. He gives it over to a Kohen. Somebody else is then going to be the one that is going to be responsible to bring his Korban. Because it's not about me. All right, I'm giving it entirely up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and on the way to getting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's somebody else that's going to be bring it to him. What?
Sota's a little different.
Sota's a little different in what way?
Doesn't he takes the korban and gives it back, or do it together?
They do stuff together, but then a sota doesn't offer it on the mizbeach. I mean, as it's for as mincha, it gets passed on, gets put on by a kohen. And this idea of unity, of working together, is perhaps an additional reason for that famous Gemara in Maseches Menachos, on the last half of Menachos, where it points out that whenever, in the context of Korbanos, only the name of Hashem Yudke Vavke is given. Because Yudke Vavke is the name of unity, as opposed to the name of separateness. It's a name of that.
Elohim is separate,
right? And Yudke Vavke is together, and we're giving it and giving it over to Hashem because we're really all unified together.
We take the four species, right?
Yeah.
Why is Elohim separate?
Elohim is that God is God, and we're here. I mean, God is the king, and we're the subjects. God is the judge, and we're the...
Hashem and Elohim is one.
I understand, but the terminology of Yudke Vavke is the terminology.
What we're saying is there's unity and plurality. That's the difference. The Goyim can't handle the plurality. They just make different gods.
Yes, very good. Okay, so quickly.
So the whole thing about the covenant and the has to be yours. In other words, in order to give something completely over, it has to be yours to begin with.
What do you mean? But it has to be my korban. I have to own it. Yeah, and then but I give it entirely over.
Right. You can't give something entirely over unless it's yours to begin with. You can't take somebody else's.
Correct.
Give it over and because it's not, you know.
Correct.
Giving it up.
Correct.
Giving something else.
Okay. One more thought here. Let's see. You don't know. So we'll get in that little thought. So that first Rashi, there is that somewhat cryptic first Rashi where it says, Vayikra al Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem Elav. So what is the meaning of Vayikra? So Rashi had said that a Vayikra was Lashon Chiba. It was a Lashon of Chiba. What's a good thing? Of love. A love of connection. And how do we know that Chiba is a language of connection? Lashon Shem Lach Yasharis, that's what they said, that's the way they speak to each other, the Karazel Zevi Amar, right? Aval Nviye Umus Ha'olam Nigla Aleim Lashon Arayv to, 1 second. Oh, and then the Rashi continues on, it says, HaKol Holich HaMagi La'azna V'chol Yisrael Lo Shomen, the voice went out and was heard by Moshe, and nobody else heard. Yachol af lahafsakos haisa kriya. Maybe the kriya was even for when there are breaks. Tamalomer v'yidaber lidbor haisa kriya v'lo lahafsakos. That the kriya was for the dibor and not for the breaks. So why were there breaks? Rashi continues on and asks, why were there breaks? In order to give Moshe a chance in the middle to contemplate that which was going on. So in the Sefer Shemen Atov, volume 4, so he asks, What's going on with this thing that's being added here? That, well, I would have thought the brakes are in, the brakes are out. So there is certain, that even though the brakes are not part of the Vayikra, it's still part of the continuous package. And he explains that, because Moshe had to think about it in between. So he explains that there is the Yesh Bazel Limud Gadol, the Lorak Tochin HaTorah B'tziveihem Malei Kedusha, El Degam HaSviva V'Avir HaMukaf Yesh B'Kedusha. It's not just the letters of the Torah that have sanctity, but even the surrounding areas of the Torah, even the columns, the white of the Torah, also has sanctity. Therefore, the Torah has to be entirely, the Torah has to have parchment around all of it. You can't have a letter that goes all the way to the end of the parchment. It has to be white at the end to demonstrate that it's not just the letters of the Torah, but also the areas surrounding the Torah. He adds in this gam ze inyan hakafos. It's not just the Torah itself, but the Torah has the ability to impact that which are around it. So then he goes on and says that perhaps that's the pshat. When we say under a wedding, at a wedding, what is the bracha of a wedding? Melech Olam. Well, how do we continue? How do we conclude the bracha? Asher kid. No, we conclude that first bracha, the bracha of Kedushin. Baruch Atah Hashem, Hamakadesh, Samo Yisrael, Ayudei Chupa v'Kedushin. That Hashem sanctifies us with Chupa and Kedushin. So what does that mean? What is the meaning of those two sanctities? So he goes on, builds a whole, you can tell he gave this as a drush at a wedding at some point. He says, also another minhag. The minhag is that when a man gets married, so he has his pair of tefillin, usually. Sometimes he'll get a second pair of tefillin, or Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. But that's the responsibility of the guy. The guy pays for his tefillin and for his Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. But the talis, who pays for the talis?
The mom.
The talis comes from the mom. And also the woman goes around the man, etc. So what is the pshat in those topics? So it goes on, explains the same idea that there's two kedushos. There's the kedushos of the Torah itself, the learning itself. The inside the bottom of the tefillin is the words of the tefillin itself,
right,
as opposed to the talis, which is then spread out to include others. So the man's responsibility is the essence of the house. The woman is the one who prepares the sviva of the house, the environment of the house. And that's what joins together. I think chupa v'kidushin. Chupa is a open. Is the house, is the openness where you can see, and there's other people around, there's other people involved, that's the environment. But the Kedushin is the integral between the two of them. So there is that going back and forth, the two Kedushas, two sanctities. There's inherent, and then there is the Sviva, the environment that emanates from that. Have a good day. Tomorrow on to Eric Bays.